You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And without further ado, here is Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb. What a beautiful fall.
This is just really a normal, good-looking fall.
It is. I mean, I love watching the beets come out. The grain's pretty much harvested. Corn's being chopped now. I mean, it's just a beautiful time of the year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. So today I'm taking a story out of Tales of the Mountain Man.
Uh-oh.
And so, you know, I've always admired the trappers, the mountain men.
They were courageous.
They were courageous, and they were smart. They had a skill. Put it this way, some trappers, if they didn't have very much skill, probably went back home.
If they could find home.
If they could find home, yeah. They might still be out there.
That's something I asked you one program, and I don't mean to take a lot of time, but directions.
Exactly.
How in the world did they know? Sure, north, south, east, west, but there's a lot of room in between.
Exactly. And they knew the ridges. They knew the valleys, the canyons. They just, because they'd been around it.
Yeah.
So, but again, I want to talk about the trappers and his skill. You know, he had to know the habits of beaver to recognize a sign of beaver, to know where to go and decide the right places, set his traps. So a lot of times a brigade making a hunt broke up into small parties, which normally worked by themselves for several days at a time. Then they split up into twos and maybe threes for the actual trapping. They worked the streams, mostly in mountain meadows or similar flats where the streams were slow enough to be dammed. And we know, Zeb, they actually did trapping right down here on the Snake River.
Really?
And some of the streams and creeks that are around this area.
Now, you said they broke into groups, like twos and threes.
Right.
Were they, and some of the movies, I think, portray kind of a misnomer that they were kind of separate and off by themselves.
And then they did, yes. That's it. That is true.
Okay.
So, so what happened is late in the afternoon between sunset and dark was the usual time to set traps. And according to Osborne Russell, who was a mountain man, he said in some secrecy, he said it was not good policy for a trapper to let too many know where he intended to set his traps. So they did go off by themselves because they kind of knew what streams to work and where, and you know, they didn't want a bunch of other guys coming in where they were getting beaver.
Were there a lot of problems in the Old West with the trappers of other trappers stealing?
No, I don't think stealing, but I think they maybe kind of watched and thought, okay, he's heading in that direction. Maybe I'll go in that direction, too.
Oh,
you know, maybe go upstream or whatever. But, you know, he hunted beaver. He read the country. He recorded his route. He watched for hostiles. And he basically planned for all kinds of possible problems.
Your phone's
he
going smart. Off.
How can you tell?
I can feel the table vibrating.
We'll keep going here. Okay. I'm not going to answer it. Okay. But, you know, now let's talk about the beaver. The beaver built his house, small branches with 5-inch plastering of mud for the roof and the outer walls on the edge of the pool his dam had created. It was about 6 feet high and twice as wide. In the middle of the earth floor was a pool. And there were, in fact, two pools, and there were exits of the tunnels, which had been dug down through the earth, to the stream bed above the dam. Now, before the Indians learned to use traps, they were accustomed to hunt by blocking these tunnels. There were two escape tunnels that the beaver had. But the Indians learned how to block those escape tunnels, and then they just chopped down through the roof of the house and get the beaver.
Really?
Yeah. So now the white man, he set his traps in the natural runway of the beaver. You know, he would see like pathways where the beaver would go in and out of the water. And so he would set his traps down where they went in and out. And that was when he expected to take the beaver. And mostly, however, he baited the traps and set them in places favorable for attracting the beaver and for drowning him when caught. That's what happened, is the beaver drowned.
What did they use for bait?
I'm going to talk about that.
I figured you would.
The very next sentence, Zeb.
Okay.
The bait was a musky secretion taken from the beaver's glands.
Uh-huh.
It was used straight or doctored with other odorous substances.
I see.
In which the trapper believed in.
Odorous.
He called it, quote, medicine castoreum.
Mm-hmm.
Or the like. And he carried it in a plugged horn bottle at his belt. And it occasionally perfumed him as well.
I'll bet he was the hit at a party.
Well, they all smelled the same.
Yeah.
You know. So, again, selecting the proper place for his trap, he set it in the water of the proper depth and drove a strong, dry trap pole through the ring at the end of a 5-foot steel chain into the bank or the bed of the stream. And this was to keep the beaver from dragging the trap. And this trap weighed like 5 pounds.
Yeah.
So it was a heavy trap. Didn't want him to drag it out on the ground and into the air. And if he did, he might escape by actually gnawing off his paw.
Oh, my goodness.
They would actually do that.
Yeah.
So normally they drowned because the trap would hold them down.
So these traps are in the water.
Right.
Exactly. What would keep the – did they have to replace those quite a bit because they would rust up?
Well, I don't think so because they're down in the water and I don't know. Somehow,
if I stuck you in the water for that long, you'd rust up too.
I suppose they may have used tallow from animals or something, maybe to keep them greased up, and
I see.
So they'd work, you know, because they had to snap shut just right.
Yeah.
But when every preparation had been made, the trapper smeared a little of his castoreum on a twig or a willow, and he arched this just above the surface, directly over the trap's trigger. You know, the little thing that they step on. That,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So the scent attracted the beaver, and when he approached the bait stick, he was caught by the foot.
There you
go. That's how it happened.
There you go.
Now, all of this was subject to a bunch of different methods. Different trappers had different ways of doing things. They didn't all do it the same way. Now, keep in mind, Zeb, this was all conducted in the winter, and a man had to be pretty much dedicated to this. I mean, he waded into the stream at a good distance from the selected place, carrying the already set trap. It was already set. So he's carrying it. Because you couldn't set it if you're out in the stream.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, if that thing slams shut, whereabouts on his body is he carrying
I don't know.
This?
So he found a place, he baited it, and then he waited a distance before leaving the stream, and then he splashed water over his own trail just so the beaver couldn't smell his trail.
Really?
So it was quite a process.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Now, normally the traps are raised at sunrise or before. A full-grown beaver weighs 30 to 60 pounds. Can you believe 60 pounds?
I didn't know they were that big.
I didn't either. But the pelt weighed only maybe a pound and a half or 2 pounds when it was finally prepared out of a 60-pound beaver. So the catch was usually skinned on the spot, and the trapper, who usually had 5 or 6 traps, he would take the pelt and the medicine glands so that he'd make more of his castoreum. And this is interesting. I thought camp was never in the same place 2 nights straight. He would move around. And I don't know if that was just to avoid too much of the scent, you know. I don't know. So anyway, he usually took the tail, too, because it was considered a delicacy. When it was charred in the fire to remove the horny skin and then boiled. Now, that sounds really good to me.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, with a little, you know.
What are you doing for lunch?
Not that. So at camp, the pelt had to be what they call rough cured. So the flesh side was scraped free of tissue and sinew, and then the hide was stretched on a frame of willows, kind of like an embroidery hoop, and it was in the sun for a couple of days. When it was dried, it was folded with the fur inside and marked with the trapper's or the company's symbol. You know, if it was with the Rocky Mountain Fur Company or the American Fur Company, they would mark it with their mark, whatever that was.
Okay.
Now, when the packs were made, they were pressed into bales of about 100 pounds, and this was done at the different posts by machines made for that purpose.
Oh, they have machines for
that?
They
actually had a machine that would press these down into 100-pound bales of beaver skins.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was somehow a contraption of logs and stones, and somehow they figured out how to press these so that they were compact, I guess, which made it easier to haul them, you know, to the rendezvous or back east, wherever they were going.
So did they use it on pack mules or?
Well, that's how they would pack them, you know,
pack
to the rendezvous and then, of course, back east.
Okay.
So they had to be careful with the catch with the beaver because this was an individual responsibility, and it involved keeping the pelts dry, drying them promptly if they got wet, always safeguarding them on the trail because you never knew when you might get attacked. At lower altitudes, they had to be periodically beaten and aired out.
Periodically beaten?
Yeah, because of moths. Now, I'd never thought of a moth being a problem down in the lower altitudes. Now, in the mountains, you didn't have that problem.
Mm.
There weren't any moths up there.
Okay.
Well, trapping was complicated by high water during the spring hunt, which produced the best furs. That's when they really wanted to be out there. Spring or fall, it was conducted in the water of the mountain streams. And the mountain man's occupational disease was, you know, we've talked about this, rheumatism. And, you know, they're in this cold water for hours at a time. His joints creaked, kind of like ours. And he will be seen at dawn, limbering his legs and arms at the fire, trying to get warmed up. The water got colder as the days shortened. Before the end of September, there would be a little snow in the mountains and in the meadows.
It's surprising they all didn't get pneumonia and die.
Yeah. And, you know, pretty soon there was ice forming on the edges of the streams.
And they're standing in the water.
They're standing in there.
With moccasins on.
Yeah. And trapping, you know, and they'd go clear into early November.
Ooh,
so, you know, if it was a year like this year here for us, you know, they might be, not be too bad. But even right now, if you go stood in the creek.
Go stand in the creek.
It would be cold.
I'll tell you what.
I know the Snake River is cold.
Oh, my.
So, but a mountain man's life was skill. He not only worked in the wilderness, he also lived there. And he did so from sunup to sundown. And he had to be skilled at what he did.
I wonder how they learned the process.
I think from other trappers.
Yeah, but where did they learn it from?
Good question. Well, the Indians did a lot of trapping, killing of beavers, so they knew how to take care of the skins. So, but when you think about the danger, besides the skill, and you mentioned about how you find places. Well, here's a question. Why do you follow the ridges into or out of unfamiliar country? Follow a ridge so you can see where you're going.
Yeah.
What do you do for a companion who's collapsed because he just collapsed out in the desert or up in the mountains? What do you do for him? You know,
yeah.
Do you leave him? Do you try to help him, and maybe you get in trouble too.
You bring up a good point, though, because back in those days, if they were with other trappers, and let's say broken leg or a right. bear attack or whatever, it was kind of all over, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you remember the story of Hugh Glass.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, they left him, figured he was going to die.
Yeah.
So how do you get meat when you find yourself without gunpowder in a country with no game?
Oh, boy.
Maybe they're out of gunpowder. What tribe of Indians made this trail that you're walking on? How many are in the band? What errand were they on? And where are they going or coming? And how far from home are they? These are all things you got to think about. What mood were those Indians in? Were they on a raid? Were they just after food? You know, how old is the trail? And where are those Indians now?
Yeah.
You know, all these things have to come into play.
Wow.
So here's something to think about. You're standing in a stream and a branch floats down a stream. Okay. Is this natural or the work of animals? Or of Indians, or of other trappers.
So somebody is in the water.
Somebody upstream.
Upstream, yeah.
Yeah. Another branch or a bush or even a pebble is out of place. Why is it out of place? You know?
You had to really be watchful.
Yeah, you know. So what may have been movement did the men or animal make it? You know? And if it was an animal, why? Is that animal moving? Is it being scared by Indians? You know, buffalo are moving downwind, and elk is in an unlikely place or posture. Little things.
Well, you wanted to make sure you didn't drink the water if there was something upstream.
No, upstream. Look at this. Too many magpies are hollering, too many magpies. Okay. A wolf's howl is a little off key.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means he's got a sore throat.
It means, you better be careful. So, you know, this may be a 2-week story, Zeb. But as the snow and the game came farther down the mountainsides, the trappers got ready for winter. Now, free trappers were welcome at the different posts, like over here at Fort Hall. Mm-hmm. Some of them would spend the winter there, or Fort Bridger, some of the forts.
Was that the place to take most of the furs?
They did that, yes. But the rendezvous were probably the most popular place.
Like over by Preston.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Pierre's Hole and some of those places. So sometimes the post had a place where you could stay inside, out of the weather. You had supplies, you had a store of food, and you had cooperation, because if you were staying there, you'd go out with other guys and hunt for meat, you know, elk and deer and things like that. And then companionship, you know.
Yeah.
If you were by yourself, it could be a pretty lonely winter, you know. And thus, you know, a lot of mountain men did marry Indian wives, mm-hmm. which in many cases turned out very, very good for these Indian women, because some of these trappers became very wealthy, and the Indian women were well kept, and it was a good thing in a lot of cases. But the commoner practice of free trappers and the custom of the company brigades, however, was to winter in the mountains.
Now,
not
you say the company, like the Rocky Mountain Fur
right.
Company.
Yeah, the American Fur
what
Company.
Did they pay these trappers to do all the work?
They got a pay, but I think they also were paid by how productive they were. How many beaver
kind
skins.
Kind of a commission type thing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why a lot of them actually became free trappers, because they figured they could make more money being a free trapper and selling their own furs for whatever they could get.
I see.
So, you know, if you were with a group of trappers, free trappers, or a company, you had to find a good place for a good campsite. It had to have some kind of mild weather, plenty of wood and forage and abundant game, you know, sometimes in a good sheltered valley with streams where you could get water, obviously, preferably with wintering buffalo, and I'd never thought of that, with forested mountains where other game could be found. Now, the Rocky Mountain Fur Company and the American Fur Company wintered in such places along the Salmon River and Bear River over in Cache Valley, over there in Utah,
mm-hmm.
which wouldn't be too bad over there in Cache Valley. A place called Brown's Hole and South Park became a kind of winter paradise. And both of those are in Colorado, which probably is a little milder weather down there in Colorado.
One question I got, and I know we're almost out of time. What did these guys eat?
Whatever they could find.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it basically a protein meat diet?
Pretty much.
Was
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And I think we'll continue this next week because I'll talk about the food that was prepared by the Indian women, which actually included some sort of kind of vegetable type salad things.
Were they accepted by the Indians or hated by the Indians?
It depends on the tribe. You know, there were a lot of them. They would camp close together.
Really?
The trappers and certain
Because I would tribes. Think the Indians would feel that the white men were taking something away from them.
Maybe if there was too many of them. But I think in many cases, there's probably not more than a dozen men.
I see.
And but, you know, Jim Bridger, of course, built his trading post over on Black's Fork in the southwest corner of Wyoming, you know, Fort Bridger, in a basin where he had wintered with the Rocky Mountain Fur Company. And like I say, these valleys had gentler weather than the higher altitudes and the lower plains. So
I'll tell you what, we're going to continue this next week, right?
Yeah, there's some more things I'd like to cover on this. So we'll keep going on this. I want to talk about how they worked with the Indians. And
you said that right here in this area, there was a heavy trapping area, right?
I wouldn't say heavy, not as well as up more into the Rockies, up further north.
I see.
You know, up around Henry's Lake, Island Park area, Wyoming, Montana. But, yeah, there were beaver here.
Really?
In the Snake River area. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to continue. To be continued.
Yes.
Very good. Dr. History, of course.